The Skiffy and Fanti Show presents A Mustache in the Mutt Classic Mystery, starring Sean Connery, Michael Ironside, Jacob, a bitter chimpanzee Highlander, an angry British tea master, the old woman, Charlie, and Christopher Lambert as MacLeod. Scene 1, A Vengeance Upon the Teabag. If you have been listening to our other stories about the mustache and the mutt, you'll be surprised to know that there's actually a lot of other crap going on behind the scenes. Whatever happened to the old woman and Sean Connery after Elphaba left in disgust? How did Charlie and Jacob sneak into the Stargate facility without triggering the facility's auto-defense systems? What exactly is a French Twizzler, and why does it require an industrial-sized drill, an adult diaper, and a wombat? Unfortunately, we're not going to tell you a fracking thing about any of this, because that's not the skit Duke wrote. Instead, we're jumping to Earth, 6011, an alternate universe Duke invented so he could tell more stories about our hilarious heroes and their various villains, without fracking with the existing continuity. Wait, continuity? Seriously? There's a continuity? Ha! Yeah, right, Duke. If these skits have continuity, then my left breast is really an Amazonian warrior grafted to my body like some kind of twisted Total Recall Quato.
Oh, I just got me an idea.
Damn it, Duke! Anyway, so in 1963, an angry British tea master and a bitter chimpanzee moonlighting as a Highlander conspire to bring every Highlander from Earth 161 to Earth 6011 so they can collapse the multiverse. Or something. Truth is, I have no clue what this is all about because I don't read the scripts ahead of time like a professional. All I know is that it involves space, time, and Duke's complete disregard for physics. So, whatever. Go.
We have the crystal and the sword. All we need is a power source.
My God, must you do that, dear sir?
It's a nervous tic. Happens at random intervals.
I see.
With the Highlander Gauntlet, we can control the world with fear. No longer will there be only one.
And with an army of immortal Highlanders, we can finally put an end to the tyranny of the American tea market. Once more, the British Empire shall rule the high seas with its mountains of hand-picked tea leaves. Oh, glory to the Empire! Rule Britannia! Britannia rules the waves. Britons never, never, never shall be slaves.
You're really upset over the tea.
Ever so much. If not for those Yankee bastards, the great British Empire of tea might have ruled over every corner of the earth, but no! Those Bostonian horrors dumped our 2 billion pound stock of Zoranian tea leaves into the harbor, and the entire British economy collapsed.
Right. Anyway, so, the Highlander Gauntlet?
Oh, right, the Gauntlet. Power source. I have a friend who runs a nuclear power plant, if that may be of service.
All we need to do is hook the sword and crystal into the radioactive coils, and the Highlanders will be at our command.
Did you just throw shit at me?
Yes.
Nervous tick?
Hardly. I just like it.
Scene 2. A Twizzler 2. What the... Okay. We're merging fandoms now. Tea enthusiasts plus Marvel references plus Planet of the Apes plus Highlander. What could go wrong? Absolutely fracking everything. But whatever. Meanwhile, in a mysterious underground hotel, because everything Sean writes for these things involves a mysterious building of some kind or another, Sean Connery and the old woman are in the middle of something that's probably illegal for me to describe, when suddenly Connery senses the Highlander deep inside him, yearning for the hard, long, shafty sort of truth. I mean, this isn't an erotica novel or anything. Yeah. Ooh, twizzle me, big boy!
Where'd you stick that wombat?
Dearie, the wombat went to get us champagne an hour ago.
Is that so? Sure, we're alone, are we?
Yes! 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 Oh, you're the French Twizzler King!
wait. Do you sense that?
It's...
I have not felt something like this since I was Darth Vader.
It feels like being rammed by the Santa Fe sharks.
It is nasty.
Oh, I didn't know you liked hockey.
The team bus, dearie, not the team.
That sounds slightly impossible.
It takes practice.
But yes, I have felt this before. It's the Highlander gauntlet, calling across the ether to the darkness of my subconscious mind. I can feel it eating at me, yearning for my caress. Yes, the sword of truth, it awaits me.
Us, dearie, us! Come, let's get the wombat and find this sword. It's always best to have more than one on hand. Scene 3. What the dick ends. See? What did I tell you? And did anyone else catch that part about Sean Connery being Darth Vader? Is this some kind of joke, Duke?
Dead frickin' serious.
Really? Okay, then. So, Sean Connery was actually Darth Vader in this alternate universe. Right. Totally makes sense, I guess. Anyway, meanwhile, in Seattle, Washington, Charlie and Jacob, now the single greatest detective crew since Sherlock and Watson, I mean, they have like a 99.9% success rate, even though they're idiots. So they're in Seattle, hunting down Christopher Lambert, who was apparently taken upon himself to become a street preacher for the venerable Ogle Bogle, whose origins, it seems, are shrouded in bullshit.
Oh, Ogle Bogle, shine your light on these peasant masses and bring salvation to your children. Let not the stinky stench of your undergarments cloud this world any longer. There is only one Ogle Bogle, and he is the foundation of all reason. You cannot sense the world without Ogle Bogle. You cannot sense reality without Ogle Bogle. Ogle Bogle. Ogle Bogle.
You see this, Jacob?
Yeah. It's like if Eric Hoven and Ted Haggard had a baby, but it fell down the stairs and got swallowed by a Cabbage Patch Kid and pooped out in a pectation factory.
Or he's just crazy.
That too, Charlie boy.
Plus, there aren't any male prostitutes or meth dealers around.
Oops, spoke too soon, Charlie Oates.
Ogle Bogle sends his regards, you decorative human pestilence.
Shing, shing, shing.
No, I am Ogle Bogle's loyal servant. You cannot destroy me.
There can be only one Highlander.
Shing, 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 shing.
All right, bucko, that's enough of that.
Unhand me, you stupid southern piece of... Ow!
Nobody insults my Charlie.
What's this all about, anyway?
The Highlander chimp is trying to collapse the universe with a Highlander gauntlet. If I'm to take his head, I must have the power of the other Highlanders. Ogle Bogle. Ogle Bogle.
There's another way.
There's never another way.
Heh. Wanna bet? Nuh-uh. Oh, yeah.
My Ogle Bogle, he's right. With that, we could stop the chimp Highlander in no time.
My eyes.
Scene 4. Endings are such sweet sorrow. If only we were recording this live so I could show everyone my amazing pectation powers. Except that's probably illegal in 12 states or something. Anywho. Now things will come to a close, and what I can only describe as an incredibly confusing scene fit for an Uwe Boll prostate exam. Sean Connery and the old woman arrive in Manhattan in pursuit of the Highlander gauntlet. Meanwhile, the Highlander chimp and angry British tea master have arrived at Three Mile Island, which in this universe never blew up or whatever, and have plugged it into a nuclear reactor. And arriving just in time, Charlie, Jacob, Christopher Lambert, and Earth-6011 Michael Ironside set their cool Avengers-style attack in motion. Oh, who are we kidding? This is nothing like the Avengers. Unless you mean that terrible movie which also stars Sean Connery. Blah. Cue the madness.
It's almost time. Soon we'll have control of an army. The gauntlet power.
Yeah!
Not so fast. Hand over the gauntlets, you treacherous, fur-faced, Kafka-esque mutant, or I'll cut off every one of your toes. How dare you, sir? Where did you learn your manners? A lion's rectum? No. America, fucker.
Now, hold on one cotton-picking minute. Ain't nobody cutting off any toes or taking over the world or bringing Highlanders from parallel universe or any such bullcrap tonight. No, we're going to all chill out, have ourselves some good old-fashioned BBQ, and drink some beer.
Heh, without our shirts on, right, Charliekins?
Maybe next time.
Aw, but they need to see my strong, hard, no longer teen body, Charlie Barkley.
Well, 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 what have we here? A shirtless dog, a southern belle, a sinister Highlander from another universe, a shit-stirring chimp, and a bloody tea-turd.
Looks like we got ourselves a perfect French Twizzler orgy, huh, babe?
Oh, my sweet dear heavens, it's a wombat. I've always wanted a wombat. Come here, you little fuzzy wombatty goodness.
Do you think he knows where that wombat has been?
It's probably best he doesn't, dearie.
The great Ogle Bogle implores you to be silent. Your depravity offends us.
I'm going to name him Terence, and I'm buying a yacht, and we'll go sailing together and have champagne, and maybe one day a little too much champagne, and who knows what will happen.
Enough! If I push this red button, I unleash the Highlanders upon you all. Just one little red button.
Enough with you. Quick, make it wolf quack. Hit him with your nips before I take off his head.
You hear that, Charlie von Strudelheimer? They want me to pectate. Pectate.
It's like that time I convinced John Bowman that orange diapers were going to be the next sexiest thing.
Not even close. Am I right?
I was the cover boy of National Geographic for 6 years straight, Wolfie. It's how I invented one half of the French Twizzler.
Which half?
The part with the wombat. You know.
Oh, I can't take it anymore.
He's dead.
I don't know which is worse. That he died from a wombat-induced myocardial infarction, or that we haven't gotten to my favorite part yet.
Back up, you insatiable piece of eye candy. I'll push the button. Don't think I won't.
Yes, and while she does that, would anyone like some tea? I have Earl Grey, English breakfast, and a massive bag of British jitsu.
You sneaky son of a bitch. Scotland will have its revenge. Yeah.
I say. Can't see the queen.
William Wallace.
And they're both out cold. Go figure. Looks like it's just the three of us against you, chimp.
And now for the button. Goodbye, you human scumbuckets.
Ah! Did she just throw feces all over us?
I believe so, ma'am.
Kinky.
I don't even want to know.
Aw, oh, Charlie Barley. He got feces all over my pecs. And she's going to push the button, too.
You know what to do, my love.
Right. I'm going to pectate her face right the fuck off. Na 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 na.
I am vanquished. Ugh.
Heh, that was too easy. Nobody is a match for my nips. Nobody. Heh, come here, Charlie Pooh.
Not here. I'll have the presents for you later.
Heh, I bet you will. And that's it, folks. Pectation. It solves every problem, it seems. It destroyed the Stargate in Earth 161 and made a lot of people throw up. In Earth 6011, it's doing the job of moronic easy way out because Duke's too lazy to spend a month working on these skits.
Hey!
Shut up, Duke. You'll win your Oscar someday. So that's basically it. Sean Connery and Angry Tea Master are knocked out, Michael Ironside is dead because a depraved sex act destroyed his brain, and the evil chimp is, well, I guess vanquished. But knowing Duke's writing style for these monstrosities, she'll be back eventually. Okay, I'm gonna go get shit-faced. Peace.
The mustache and the mutt will pay for this. Yes, they will.
Dun, dun, dun!
Son of a bitch, Duke.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the It.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate! It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skip King Fanny Show, episode 202. We don't have a tagline. I'm Sean.
I brought a sword to the party. That was going to be my tagline, but it was too far away for me to grab.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
I'm Julia.
And our special guest today is Mike Martinez. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're doing great since we have finished the skit, which is awesome. So people can listen to that on the MP3. So good times. So in any case, we are here doing torture cinema. Before we do the torture, we should probably talk about what we're drinking. And so we'll start with you, Jen. What are you drinking?
Indeed. I am drinking the most amazingly awesome Firestone Walker Velvet Merlin. It is so delicious.
Ooh, Firestone Walker does good stuff.
Oh, they do great stuff. I could have sex with this beer.
Okay, so remember, we're on video. I'm not sure we want to see that.
Well, no, it would probably be illegal in 12 states. So, not going to happen. So, well, great. All right, so what about you, Julia?
I'm not actually feeling very well, so I'm drinking a Tension Tamer Herbal Tea, which has a dragon and a castle on the box cover, so I thought that was very appropriate for our fantasy or science fiction film. Pick your poison.
All right. All right, what about you, Mike?
All right, well, I am drinking a brown ale from the Foley Brothers in Brandon, Vermont. These guys do great stuff, and they are new, and nobody's ever heard of them, and they're awesome, and you should all check out their beers.
What's it called? Can you show us the bottle?
It's called Foley Brothers. There's the bottle. There's the bottle. There's the bottle.
Ooh.
So, and it's the 22-ounce bomber, because this movie was that bad.
yes, it was. And this is your fault. You
only brought along a six-pack.
Yeah. In case people don't know why it is Mike's fault, it quite literally is his fault. Mike was one of the people who got to pick one of the perks for the still-running Worldcon fundraiser, and he decided to pick for us to watch Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Well, it's called torture cinema.
It is called torture cinema, but I figured you'd be nice and like give us something great like Star Wars 4, New Hope, you know.
No.
What are you talking about? I think he gave us a fantastic film.
Just die, Jen. Whatever. But anyway, that's why it's his fault. But in any case, I am drinking, if you cannot tell from the glass that is now half empty, sangria. I don't know what kind of sangria. I just bought whatever was $8.
Ooh.
And came in a 1.5-liter bottle, so.
That's a big bottle of sangria.
Yeah, I have not drank it all yet.
You know, I paid $7 for this bottle of beer, so that should tell you something.
Is it 1.5 liters?
No, it's 22 ounces.
Yeah, I got 1.5 liters. I don't need a liver. Who needs a liver?
We'll just leave judgment of that to the people who are listening.
All right, well, as we said, right, we are watching Highlander 2, The Quickening from 1991, the desired sequel to what is considered, I guess, a classic, the original Highlander. It still stars Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery. And that's, I guess that's about all the good we could say.
Sure.
No, just be quiet, Jen. Don't even talk anymore. You're banned from the rest of the episode. This is going to be, like, our new thing. Like, you're going to love this like you love Waterworld.
I think I love this more than I love Waterworld.
God, I hate you so much. Waterworld is
better.
I know,
you too.
Any case, so who would like to describe the plot of this movie?
Well, it is Mike's movie.
Well, all right. It's hard to describe because, really, it's such a glorious mess. So, basically, in the original Highlander, you had these immortals, and they became immortal, and they were destined to fight each other to win this sort of ephemeral prize. And they fought each other. The only way they could die was to have their heads chopped off, so they all learned how to fight with swords, and through these centuries, they fought each other, because in the end, to win the prize, there could be only one. So, and you know, it was sort of an interesting sort of, had a little bit of mythology to it. I'm not saying it was like an insta-classic or anything, but, you know, it wasn't bad. And I was like 14 when it came out, so I thought it was the best thing ever. So Highlander 2 came out in 1991 and basically took that mythology and tossed it out the window and decided that these immortals weren't simply born and living through the centuries on Earth, that they came from another planet. And the planet was called Zeist, which sounds like stale cheese. And basically, they were exiled from Zeist by this general who apparently wasn't allowed to kill them, which if you're a tyrannical general dictator type, seems like you have few limits on your power, which seems strange. This general decides that McCloud, who has won the prize and is growing old and dying on Earth, needs to just die quicker, send some goons. The goons fail to kill him, he becomes immortal again, and then the general has to come down and try to kill him, but that doesn't work because the general dies in the end. And there's also this thing about an ozone shield and a terrorist who, after the first 5 minutes, really doesn't do any terrorizing. And it's just a mess.
It is a mess.
It really just took a very simple, relatively straightforward mythology and just layered just crap after crap on top of it. So... that's what it's about.
Well, that made a lot more sense than the movie that I actually watched. So,
well, and then... there is a lot wrong with that movie.
Oh, yes. Well, that's why you picked it. So we will start, as we normally do, with likes first to make this interesting and end on, obviously, a hate note, because we should end on a hate note since this movie is terrible. So we will start with Jen, your first like, Jen.
Okay, I'm going to go with... I'm going to start with my biggest like in the entire film. Okay. A freaking sword fight on hoverboards and glider wings.
Yeah,
it was so beautiful and wonderful, and it made me so happy. Seriously.
I feel like the podcast later because they can't see. She's glowing right now.
I am glowing. I loved. Oh, my God. I like the second the glider guy, like his wings pop open and he shoots through the sky in one of the worst displays of wire work I have ever seen. And then the hoverboard bits and oh, it was gorgeous. And it was probably the worst actual sword fight because they just like occasionally go swing and the swords hit and that's about it.
Until he chops his wing.
Swing, which I sell at my toy store, by the way. But it was glorious. It's the only thing futuristic in the future, which was kind of hilarious too. And I want to have sword fights on hoverboards now.
You're so wrong, Jen.
I'm sorry, how could this possibly be a dislike?
No. Well, we'll get to that in
theory,
a minute.
You know, in theory, hoverboard sword fights could be cool. So, you know.
Greatest mashup ever!
Just points for at least coming up with the notion.
Okay, the key to that is, in theory...
and practice. Okay, actually, it was slightly poorly executed, because like I said...
Slightly? Slightly poorly executed.
Some of the worst wire work ever, and they only, like, hit swords occasionally, but...
Nothing about that scene looked like people actually flying or hovering.
No.
It was very clear, like, they just...
Conceptually, it is one of the coolest fucking things ever, okay? And I'm sorry, there's no arguing against that.
I don't care if it's cool conceptually. Like, that's great that, like, they came out with the head, oh, it's a cool idea, but unfortunately, you know, they basically handled it as, you know, I'm trying to think of it. Oh, basically as well as the Broncos at the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm making a topical sports reference because people need it in their lives. So, all right, well, we'll switch to Julia now, to your first like, Julia.
So my first like is the opening credits were actually pretty okay. I was all prepared to hate them because unlike what I had imagined originally, there were no actual Queen songs written to the originals of this movie. Freddie Mercury died the year it came out, and he was too sick to be writing songs for Highlander 2. So they didn't actually have any new Queen songs, and A Kind of Magic was actually from Highlander 1 and appears briefly in a later scene in the movie. And it was very sad to me when I worked that out, which I at least worked out before I started watching it, so I didn't have to be super disappointed all through the movie afresh. But I was still like, okay, I'm going to go into this expecting the music to totally suck. And actually, the opening credits of the opera were pretty cool, and the sort of zoning in on the world and the under the dome sort of effect was kind of neat. And so I started out with the first like 3 minutes thinking, okay, this is sort of stylistically interesting and it could be a good movie. And that's my first like.
You're talking about the operatic scene?
I'm talking about the whole opening where the camera is panning in on the city. And we're seeing the dome for the opera is playing in the background, which we then figure out is because old man Christopher Lambert is watching it. But, like, the whole opening, the first, like, 3 minutes, maybe, of the movie, that's my first like.
Oh, okay. I actually like that, too. I think mostly because the opera was really good. Yeah, I mean, that was actually a really neat scene. There are moments, I feel like, in this film when you think that the director knew that he could make this good, but then there are moments, obviously, where, like, the script just failed him
miserably. I am only talking about my first like, Sean.
I know.
The first 3 minutes of the movie. And this is one of those moments. Now, I'm not going to talk about what I don't like, because that comes later.
I like the opera.
The whole rest of the movie, spoiler.
Okay. Well, I'm just agreeing. I liked it. I thought that scene was overall pretty good in comparison to what was the shit fest to follow. So, okay. All right, why don't we switch to you, Mike, your first like?
Well, actually, Julia mentioned it. There was some Queen in there. And, you know, it was the year Freddie died. And so to hear A Kind of Magic, there were some strains of Who Wants to Live Forever. I mean, that soundtrack to the first Highlander was, like, a big part of the movie and you know, everything else, and me being of a certain age, unlike you young punk Duke.
Not that
you know,
young.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you are.
Punk.
I'm a punk.
I'm already drunk. So, no, just to hear Queen in there, at least there was a thread, the barest thread of continuity thematically with some of the music. So, I mean, that was cool to hear. And you know, there were, like, very little hints and threads, very subtle things in there that you could see they kind of played just with a little bit of the first movie and kind of stuck it in there. I don't know why they bothered, but they did, and it was nice to see.
You came up with, like, a legitimate like.
I have two. The other three are just going to be made up.
Fair enough. All right. Okay. Well, I will jump to my first like, which is that during the watching of this, I watched this on Hulu because it's free on Hulu to watch. So in case anybody wants to torture themselves and watch this, There was a great advertisement for, I have no idea what the fuck it was for, that involved Gary Oldman talking to me. And that just brought me so much joy because I just really want Gary Oldman to read stories to me for when I go to bed. Because he just has a great voice. And I think it was for a phone. I don't know what it was for, but it played more than once during the movie when I watched. And I was very
totally missed that.
Did you not get the ad experience with Gary Oldman?
Was it part of the movie, or was it like a Hulu advertisement that you enjoyed?
Because Gary Oldman, one of the greatest actors of our present time, was in the 1991 Highlander 2, The Quickening. He would sully his career that much to do that.
Crazy.
Well, he was in Bram Stoker's Dracula, so...
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw that out there. And anyway... You're not even liking the movie, Sean. You're liking an advertisement that you saw on Hulu.
I think it qualifies because it's part of
No, that totally does not qualify.
Sorry.
It was part of his viewing experience.
It was part of my viewing experience, and
cheater.
It was hard to tell the difference except that for the film quality.
Cheater. Whatever.
I'm sorry.
Actually,
I'm sorry
to be fair,
if I liked the commercial more than the movie because the commercial was like actual fuchsia-y. Because it involved a cell phone doing things that they couldn't even imagine. Like, I mean, come on. The old man who's like, I'll just type on my computer and nobody will find out the conversation we had. Just use a fucking pen!
He had that
you can't,
pen ready.
You can't backspace a pen.
No, but you can eat the paper.
That is literally the dumbest thing I have ever heard. Because backspacing on a computer is somehow less legitimate than eating a piece of paper?
If you recall, remember what happens, the other guy, the business douche, finds out all the stuff that they did on there. So
I just want
matter.
You to know that you're turning me into an alcoholic.
Good. You
Which
don't
is
need
not
a liver
funny.
Either. Mike can give you part of his liver when you need it. Anyways, that's what I like because honestly I hated this movie and I wanted to save my more legitimate likes for later.
You're a jerk face.
Shut up, Waterworld lover. Anyway, alright, so we need to switch to dislikes as per usual, so we will start with you, Jen. First dislike.
Okay, my first dislike is that was like the shortest post-apocalyptic future alien war ever. And it should have been longer, because that would have been an awesome movie.
Was that what happened in the first few moments of the movie with Sean Connery?
That's what's happening. That's why they're like, Michael Ironside is the general of the opposing forces. But yes, Sean Connery is like, you know, one of the people. It's like this weird, I don't know, rebel army.
Well, they didn't
Sean
really
Connery,
bother to
they
explain.
Don't, no, they didn't bother to explain. This is my assumption. So Sean Connery is a member of the Rebel Army, but he's one of the special aliens that gets to live forever and something like that. So he transfers, he connects his power with Christopher Lambert, and he says, you are the leader, the great leader, except that Christopher Lambert totally sucks as a leader because his army subsequently loses miserably. Probably
in about 20
because
seconds.
Exactly. Probably because they're all using swords while the other guys, I swear, have lasers or something. But yeah, Michael Ironside, he totally missed it. It was awesome. It was like Dune War. It was fantastic. I think they used the costumes in Dune, actually.
I must have fallen asleep. That'll come later.
10 minutes.
It'll come later.
But yeah, that could have made a cool movie. Instead, we go to one of my next dislikes, and I'm not going to talk about that yet.
Okay.
It was way too short. It could have made it could have been a contender, but no.
Okay, well, I have lots to say about what you just talked about after Julia gives her dislikes.
Okay. So I have to actually get into the dislike, the major dislike, the plot making no sense dislike. The plot makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
I think that Roger Ebert gave this movie half a star out of 5 and was just like, this doesn't make any sense, which it doesn't. And, like, I was extra disappointed after my hopes had risen from that first 3 minutes. And I was like, this is all right. This is okay. And then somehow, even before the opera finishes, there's like a war in a desert that doesn't have anything to do with anything that never really comes back later. And it turns out the Highlander and all of the immortals are actually aliens, and that he's maybe not originally from Scotland and Sean Connery is not from Spain, which gets into another of my later dislikes, but I'll just leave that one on the table for right now. And like that somehow the god of this planet has told them that they have to be immortal on Earth and that they have to fight each other and cut off their heads or something, which you think might like then later come around, except that no, because then it turns out that I guess Christopher Lambert has won the Highlander game in the previous movie, and so then he like gets to die. That was the whole point of the last movie, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to die. But instead of like actually being interested in that, the guy wants him to have to be immortal again. So then he makes him immortal, but then he sends people to kill him, and they're like super inept, and I don't understand why you would even send those people to kill him. Why not just let him die as an old man? I don't know. Because it's basically like him having been sent to kill them, them having been sent to kill him is what makes his immortal thing kick back in, because if there's more than one of them, then they can be only one, and they have to be immortal. But if they're like, if there's only one of them on Earth, then they can be mortal and die, I guess. I don't know. We tried to puzzle this out. Like, I watched this with my devastatingly handsome friend Jeffrey and other people, and Jeffrey had this whole idea of how that was working, which involved like when another immortal like lands on Earth, then his having won reverses. And then like the quickening happens, and he magically, through the power of like getting off on having killed people, is able to summon Sean Connery, who's supposed to be dead, but I don't know what happened there. And then there's like a whole completely perplexing scene that's supposed to be funny, where Sean Connery walks into a production of Hamlet, and even though he's been alive for God knows how long and should probably know what Hamlet is, acts like he has no idea. I like your devil horns, Sean.
I know, I'm sexy.
But so like basically none of this makes any sense. And then there's like terrorism because of the woman who's a terrorist, except that plot makes no sense. And then there's Dr. Cox from Scrubs, who's apparently the main villain, who randomly hooks up with another guy who is another immortal, except that I have no reason to believe that Dr. Cox would want to or trust him or anything. And none of it makes any sense at all, anywhere. They took a perfectly good fantasy movie and just, like, tore it to shreds, put it in a blender with some other bad things, and then regurgitated it as sort of imitation Blade Runner with badness.
Okay, so this is also my dislike, so I just figured I should get it out of the way with my cool devil horns on. Because, Julia, you're totally right. This movie makes no fucking sense whatsoever. It makes zero sense. I mean, I missed the scene. We'll come to this later because I might have fallen asleep a few times. But there are other things that don't make any sense. And Julie, you've mentioned a lot of the really, really like just nonsensical ones. And I suspect that you and I will have a dislike that is very similar later.
I didn't even get into all of them. That was just some of them.
No, there's a list.
It is a huge list. So, like, I'm not going to talk about the Highlander thing because that you already mentioned, and it makes no sense whatsoever. I don't understand any of it. It makes no sense. Like, why does Michael Ironside's character do any of the things that he does? I don't understand why he is like a raging asshole. There's no motivation for him to be that way. He's just a creepy sociopathic douche nozzle. So he's just weird. I don't understand him. But in any case, the other things that I found really just didn't make any sense was the world that he lives in the present of the film, is a sort of future world in which everything's inside a bubble like a John Travolta movie. And it's very confusing because I never really understood, like, okay, so somehow everybody believes that the Earth is like all poison, so they needed the bubble. But then the bubble is not there for any real reason, so
okay, so that I can actually explain.
Yeah, this
was made
during
the time when we as a whole society believed that there was a hole in the ozone layer and that that was going to cause us all to die from, like, bad, bad UV rays. So the idea is that Christopher Lambert's character was, like, got into science after he won in the last movie and came up with a way to block the UV rays from touching people and killing them by, like, basically covering the whole Earth below where the ozone layer would have been, because the ozone layer had shrunk to nearly nothing. And the idea, this, like, the actual science fiction underpinning of that part was kind of interesting. The idea that the terrorist has is that the ozone layer has managed to repair itself and the shield is no longer necessary. But because they're living under the shield, they don't know what's above it and they can never, like, have natural daylight and they basically live in darkness. And so that makes it a very noir sort of interesting cyberpunk world. And I was kind of fascinated by that. And so, but basically because Christopher Lambert's Highlander powers are the only thing that can take down that shield, then she needs him to go and do it, I guess.
But she doesn't know that. She doesn't know he's
That doesn't make any more sense at all. But
and the Highlander shield powers could make you, you know, derail a energy shield. I mean, but anyway.
Well, that's another thing. The whole idea of the shield existing does make sense. Like, the idea that
the shield makes sense.
The ozone layer would kill us all, and that we would then try to come up with a shield from the sun makes some sense.
Well, okay, so what
and
I would say
is... And that a company
is,
would try to take advantage of that even after it failed, or even after it was unnecessary, because all the countries of the world are paying them to maintain it.
Yeah, right. None of that makes sense.
Either. None of that made any sense.
No,
but
that totally makes sense. I would like to have seen Dr. Cox's character actually, like, secretly going above the shield and having a vacation home up there, though, because that would make it
that
extra
would have been
cool.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yes. That would have been cool.
Okay, well, none of that makes any sense because I don't believe for a moment that Christopher Lambert's character is actually intelligent enough to have come up with something as complicated as this.
I don't think he came up with it. I think he was more like a financial backer or planning stuff. He was like project lead, exactly.
Where did he get his money?
He is filthy freaking rich!
Over 500 years. I mean, you're going to get some cash.
Well,
exactly.
If there's one thing that I've learned from watching Sabrina the Teenage Witch, it's that the secret to getting rich, as told by Aunt Zelda, is just saving your old crap, and eventually it becomes worth a ton.
That's what he did. They just have a bunch of money
for selling their pewter dishes, for instance.
In the first movie, he was an antique dealer, basically by probably putting all of his old crap into a storage shed, you know, the medieval version of self-storage. And then, you know, a couple hundred years later, he pulls it out, and he's set for his next lifetime. So, but...
Still doesn't make any sense.
Speaking of that first movie, that's my first dislike. It's just... Highlander 2 completely destroyed a perfectly good movie. Highlander was not film school awesomeness. It wasn't... you know, it certainly wasn't deep storytelling, and now Sean Duke has a clown head on, and oh, he's flipping through. This is fantastic.
There you go. That's what I want.
Film discussion and a show. Now he's sporting a fake mohawk. Anyway, boy, the people who are listening to the podcast can be really confused. anyway, so like, in 1991, I was in college, and I was super excited to see Highlander 2. I'm like, man, Highlander was such a great movie. You know, I don't want to say it was foundational to, like, my love of science fiction, but as a science fiction fan, I enjoyed it. As a science fiction fantasy fan, I thought this was cool, interesting take on fantasy. They took themselves just seriously enough to give some fun things to think about and just lighthearted enough to make it a good movie. And so I went with a friend and we went to see it on opening night. And we were so excited, and then within 3 minutes, they cut from the opera to this planet called Zeist, and then Sean Connery and Christopher Lambert are dipping their fingers in a pool of glowing goo and smearing it on each other's foreheads and talking about some other mystical crap, and I'm like, what? And
okay, then... wait. I have to stop you just briefly. Where on Earth did you get the whole other planet stuff? Because that was something... I totally missed somehow.
Okay, so the versions that we've seen now have been scrubbed of some of that. but in the very original, they were from the planet Zeist and they were aliens.
Okay. That confused me because it's scrubbed enough in this version that it just, it's very bizarre. It almost seems like, you know, they were humans that lived pre-fall of the dinosaurs or something. You don't know right. because all they give you is, we're sending you to the future. So, okay.
Right. No, I think that was overdubbed when they tried to fix it in home video or something. But no, because I remember leaving the theater with my friend, going to a bar, one of the few that would serve underage.
of course.
And, of course, the beer was horrible, but at that point we didn't care because it was like $5 a pitcher, and we're just like, bring it. And all we would just say is Zeist and pour and drink. Zeist, what is Zeist and pour and drink? And just you took such a great notion, and you just derailed it. And I think that has left me angry and bitter for years, and I'm using this as a therapy session to get it off my chest. And to pimp my next book, The Enceladus Crisis, that comes out on May 6th, but mostly as a therapy session to get this off my chest.
Mostly as a therapy session. See, like, the fact that you're explaining all of this does mean that some of the things I found really confusing about the film start to make more sense. But the version I saw must have not had any of the explanation you just gave me for, like, the alien planet. Because, like, all I remember from the beginning, and this may be because I fell asleep and then woke up later and didn't realize that I'd missed anything, which is entirely possible. But all I remember is, like, they had the opening, like, credit section with the, like, just really lame black screen with white letters on it, and then the opera scene, and then he, like, flashes back to, like, Sean Connery and the goo scene, and then it flashes back to the opera, and then it flashes back, and then he's, like, getting turned back into the Earth worlds by weird alien douches, and then he's like, hey, what's up? Like, I'm old again.
No, see, Sean, you didn't actually miss any of the movie.
No, that's just...
None of it makes any sense. You saw it. It doesn't make sense.
This literally was recut by a film school reject, because basically the first theatrical release was so bad. I mean, the director actually tried to get his name taken off it.
I would
tell you. I mean, he tried to do the Alan Smithy thing, and the production company said they were going to sue him.
That's hilarious.
Christopher Lambert threatened to walk off. I mean, IMDb is great for this stuff. It was a shitstorm just waiting to happen, and so they've tweaked it over the years to try to make it make any sense, and it's just a muddled mess. But I remember just very clearly how inanely stupid. And how angry it made me feel as that 19-year-old who would then go and get really drunk after watching this film.
Hear that?
Disclaimer, teenagers, do not go out at the age of 19 and get drunk.
No, that doesn't happen.
Unless you live in any of the countries where that is legal, which includes like most of Europe and Canada.
That's true.
The real disclaimer is do not watch Highlander 2 if you are underage.
Or just don't watch Highlander 2.
Yeah, really, just don't watch Highlander 2. Go
watch
Highlander
it. 1. It's amazing.
No.
Shut up,
no.
Jen.
If you really want to see hoverboards, you can go watch Back to the Future 2.
Nowhere near as cool. No.
They're way cooler in that.
No, because there were no sword fights. So.
Only because it wasn't there long enough, but in the slash fiction, there is.
You read the slash fiction. Literally, they're slashing. How do you know that there's slash fiction, Duke?
There has to be slash
there
fiction.
There has to be. There's slash fiction.
Oh my god,
for
that
everything.
Whole movie is so much slash bait.
There's
we have a
and fancy
bond
slash
that
fiction.
Can never be broken.
Wait,
stop
what?
It, there is.
Panty no,
slash fiction? Oh my god.
There will be
like
now.
Really
I'm experiencing
paranoid.
The quickening. Sean Connery.
Oh my god.
What, you totally didn't actually get that just raging homoeroticism that was underneath all of Highlander 2?
I wasn't paying attention to it.
It was everywhere. Everywhere.
That's probably true.
Oh god, that would be a great, great, like, Brokeback Mountain meets Highlander, and it's just Sean Connery and Christopher Lambert in a romantic...
I can't quit you.
I don't know what movie you guys watched, but that is Highlander 2.
Right.
It's...
Okay, let's move on.
Second like Django.
It took us 40 minutes, I just want to point out, to do one like and one dislike.
Okay, go, hurry up, shut up, go.
Okay, my next like is the very bizarre choice of set design and scene setting that they had in what is supposed to be, what year is it again? Anybody remember? 2024?
Yep.
Okay, 2024, and yet somehow everybody drives a classic car. So awesome.
All of their technology went to building the dome, and so basically they're living in Cuba.
Right, I guess so. It's like, nope, nothing that happened in the last 40 years.
Well, new technology is driven by photosynthesis, Jen.
Obviously, duh.
Oh. I'm sorry, I forgot about that. So, but it was cool. It was this very bizarre element of 1940s in the future that made no sense in the context of the film. But nothing made sense in the context of the film, granted. But particularly when you, God, I can't even say that. Particularly when you put it up against the previous film. But I'm sorry, I forgot they threw the previous film out before making this one.
They didn't just throw it out. They took it out back and they pissed on it. It was horrible.
They pissed on it and they beat it.
They defiled it.
Bloody pulp and then peed and threw shit at it. Yeah, they did a lot of things to the previous movie.
Unspeakable.
I have come up with a way that the ending to this movie could have made it all better. And that is that if after having gone through all of the nonsensical action of the movie, what actually happened was the usher at the opera house goes and tries to wake old man Christopher Lambert, and it finds out that he has in fact just died.
Oh my God, that was
And that was like his last heart attack induced fever dream.
That really would have done it.
That
actually happened, but he like had to dream of himself both getting with a hot chick saving the world and getting back together with his old boyfriend one last time.
It's all there. Okay, back to my like though. Yeah, essentially, I really did like. I liked the look of the both time zones. I liked, like as I said before, I really did like the look of the army, even if I hate. Which is why I hated that it ended so quickly. I liked the look of the future, quote unquote. It was kind of cool. It was good styling. It's unfortunate that the rest of the movie totally sucked ass. I mean, like for instance, the weird punk guys from the past, alien planet past.
Save it for later, Jen. Save that one for later.
And I'm gonna. I agree. You actually took my other prepared like because I liked the sort of neo noir sort of look of the set design and everything else. It slightly Burton-esque Batman, slightly Blade Runner, slightly Chinatown. I wouldn't have minded seeing just a little bit more exposition on that. But it wasn't bad. As an element, I felt like, again, not many things, but with a few things in this movie, it had potential. So that was my second like. Just that's all I had, though.
Excellent. We agreed on some.
I actually agree with you guys. And that is also one of my likes, is the sort of cyberpunk noir setting of the movie was actually really interesting, and I was rooting for that world. I was rooting for something interesting to happen with that world. And I did actually really like it. And to go back to what you were saying earlier, Jen, about that hoverboard hang glider fight, I actually really liked seeing those things, and I liked that it was wire work, because I thought about, while watching it, how it would look if it was done by Michael Bay today, and it would look much more fake, because those people would not be on anything like that. It would all be CGI, and it would not feel like it had real weight.
There wouldn't be people.
So, like, even though there was, like, not really good fight choreography there, and I hated the alien dudes, I did actually really appreciate the hoverboard and the wing glider thing.
Excuse me.
Oh, God, Jen, stop.
So, yeah, and I liked the look of the world, cool. And I liked the idea that, like, living under the dome has basically sort of stunted everything, so people have gone into this retro sort of existence and decided to live in basically, like, the 40s or 50s for some reason.
Well, I will just say that my like is related to all of yours, which is basically that the noir scenery union was well represented here, and I was very pleased by that.
I don't like you. Everything has a union.
Only things I like have unions, very clearly. You know, the plot designers union obviously did not get representation here.
No, sadly.
They failed at negotiations. They were at the second stage, and they lost it out to chaotic bullshit union, which apparently just had cheaper rates. So they went with that and took a gamble.
Indeed.
And it's sort of like, you know, instead of it getting a union for construction workers that uses actual concrete and steel rods, the Play-Doh and Legos union to build your houses. Basically what you get. So,
good luck
to them. Anyway, all right. Second dislike, Jen, go.
Second dislike. Honestly, I was torn on this one, as I was on most of my dislikes.
I hate you so much.
I know you do. Okay, so there's this, like, super epic scene when Michael Ironside hijacks a subway train.
Yes! I love that scene.
Michael knows where I'm going with this. Oh, it was gorgeous. I sat there, this is the one part that my husband watched with me, and he actually made me rewind at one point because I had to look away, and I missed something that was truly epic. Truly, as if the scene itself wasn't epic. Okay, so the thing I dislike about it is that it was... Shut up, Michael.
I said nothing.
Okay, so he hijacks this subway.
No, you gotta get to the part where he crashes through the ceiling.
Hijacks the subway train. And somehow manages to get it to, like, 600 miles per hour.
And yet still stays in town.
And yet, A, still stays in town over a 10-minute scene. I mean, it's really long. But it was glorious, so it was okay. The thing I disliked about it is that somehow it manages to break through only one wall when it crashes. When, seriously, a 600-mile-per-hour bullet train probably should have gone a bit further. I'm just saying, I'm not an expert in physics, but yeah, I just doubted how, you know, realistic that was. But the thing that was awesome is that in this whole physics fucking universe of the 600 mile per hour train, this is why I couldn't decide if I liked this or disliked this, is that people are, like, flying through the cars as somehow, you know, my husband's sitting there going, he's like, wow, it's a really good thing that planes don't go that fast or we'd all be smashed in the back of it. It was so hilarious. And the best part, the best part is the truly awful special effects of the one guy. This is where my husband made me rewind. The one dude who has, like, the super weird plastered back face when his eyes are bulging out. It's like
that guy.
It's like a split second. And yet, it's one of the funniest things in this entire movie. And you know what? Honestly, I didn't dislike anything about that scene until the final part when he somehow just goes like 20 feet after he crashes. That was the only thing I disliked about it. The rest of it was comedy freaking gold.
Uh-huh. Okay, Jen. All right. Julia, what about you?
Okay, so I just to add on to Jen's thing, I was just disappointed that after it got above 88 miles per hour, he didn't end up back in 1985.
But, I think you just won the podcast.
So basically, my second like is that once you actually get to see McCloud and Ramirez doing their buddy action stuff, it's kind of fun. Like, they finally get together, which takes, like, way too long, and then they're together for very, very little time. But while they are together, they have some fairly fun banter. They have a little sword fight for no reason because they're having fun, and then they do some action stuff and get shot up in a car, and all of that's kind of fun to watch, and then it's over really fast. But while they're together, that should have been, like, really, it should have been Highlander 2, you get to see Ramirez and McCloud get together again and have fun. And instead, too little of the movie was based on that. But when they did, it was kind of fun.
I just got to drop in a hand. Just based on some things you'd said earlier, Julia, do you think that their sword fight was actually a mating ritual?
If you don't think that, I don't... like, it's pretty obvious from the point where Christopher Lambert is like, quickening, Ramirez, that, like, and that's the first thing you see, that, like, anything they do is gonna be a mating ritual. The first thing Ramirez does when he arrives on planet is, like, I gotta look hot for my date.
That's
and then
right.
He goes to that shop and he's like, I would like to be made into a gentleman, and then randomly pays them with like a pearl earring, which totally tailors would take as like cash money.
Right, because that happens a lot in New York.
All the time.
Does in 1991.
I dropped a watch and the other day and I got a whole suit out of Banana Republic. It was great.
They don't work that often today, but in 1991 they temporarily suspended U.S. currency. So
you guys are ruining one of my likes.
Sure. Well, I gave you my like, so it's up to you guys now.
Okay. All right, Mike, what about you?
Okay, dislike? I'm still on dislike. All right. You know, I really disliked the portrayal of evil.
Wait, this was a dislike that we were supposed to be doing?
Are we doing a like or a dislike?
It's a dislike. I just really loved my dislike.
Oh, I gave you a like because I was sure Jen gave you a like.
Oh. Sorry, okay, you didn't steal my
I guess like. That was my third like. Oops, I went out of order.
That was my third like, too.
That's okay.
Rock on.
Are we on third dislike?
I don't even know. We're on second dislike, I thought.
That's fine. My second dislike is that it took way too long to get to the buddy action bit, and it happened for far too little time. The end.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because Jen really did totally confuse all of this, because hers was very likey.
I couldn't decide.
Well, you know,
about this movie at all, honestly.
But, you know, this movie, if it is comedic, which in many points it is laughable, certainly, it wasn't intended to be.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but taken as a comedy...
Take it as a comedy.
It is classic.
Tolerable.
But second dislike for you.
The portrayal of evil here is just, it's like a 6-year-old villain. I mean, okay, in the first movie you had the Kurgan, and he was very much a psychopathic bad guy. But given his backstory, and given the years of bloodshed and everything else that he had gone through, lifetime after lifetime, one could at least... suspend just enough disbelief to sort of say, okay, this is a bad man and I want to see his head chopped off.
And obviously, since he was exiled from such a wonderful, wonderful
garden
alien
spot.
Planet, you know.
Right, so, yeah, I mean, but here, you know, you have this General Katana. He is a general. He is supposed to be leading armies. He is allegedly going to be somewhat responsible for keeping things running. And he gets to Earth, and he's like a six-year-old who just wants to break shit. And why? There's just no sense there. It's like it's lazy writing. It's lazy directing. It's lazy acting. I'm evil because I hurt people and blow stuff up and have a maniacal laugh.
And I think it's just... because he works in the music industry.
Nice.
Like, right. Didn't you learn that in the taxi scene?
Yeah, because he's a badass who works in the music industry. It's just so disappointing. I mean, it's just, come on. Give me anything more. Give me a reason why he hates McCloud. Give me something that's a little personal. Instead, he is more of a mannequin than the last movie you guys did. So,
oh.
I mean, it's just
pretty
horrible.
Much.
Oh, snap.
He is just, and I mean, Michael Ironside can act. I mean, he's not going to do a rom-com, but he can do some stuff.
We are leering
at the camera. I think he was a horrible, poorly written, poorly acted villain, and it just, he was a cardboard cutout.
And why on earth did he try to get together with Dr. Cox to fight Christopher Lambert, and why did Dr. Cox think that was a good idea?
And how did he even know, you know, okay, so you've never been to Earth and you see this glowing shield and you're like, I know that shield, it's run by the corporation. I know where the directors meet and I'm going to go and muscle my way because I know what a corporation is as opposed to being a general on an alien planet. Obviously that goes back to plot point, but yeah.
Maybe he was actually a son of Steel. That explains everything. Then he can just, like, that explains why he basically grunts all the time.
Yeah. We need
Tums. Just take some Tums.
Right, Danny here so bad because he could do the grunt. And then he would be like, happening.
You anyway. Just recut Highlander 2 with the soundtrack of Sons of Steel. It would make as much sense.
We oh my totally gosh, it would be better.
Dude, let's do a lip sync of Highlander 2, write a script for it, and put it on the internet, and we'll all be famous. We can fix it.
Great.
We can fix that.
That'd be
great. Or at
least
make it really funny.
Okay, well, I guess I should get my second one out of the way. My second dislike is actually the romance plot. I'm not sure if romance plot is exactly the appropriate term for it, because I didn't understand it at all. But, like, there's the terrorist chick, which, as Mike noted before, doesn't ever actually do much in the way of terrorism. She, like, breaks into a facility at one point and, like, reads some things, and then she leaves. But she doesn't really destroy anything. She just sort of, like, steals information, I guess. But, like,
which is okay. I mean, you know, it's not bad. Closed network, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, she's basically the Edward Snowden of her time.
Nice.
Yeah, but not nearly as effective. Well, that's a whole other question.
It's a high-tech facility.
She does.
Yeah. Well,
if she's convinced that there's a problem, why didn't she just blow up the facility? But anyway.
No, well, here's the thing. First off, they're in, like, it's not exactly pitch black night when they sneak in, so I don't really think they have much in the way of security to begin with. Because there's no way nobody saw those guys, like, sliding down on the
wire. No, that was...
That was stupid. If you say you like it, I will hate you so much, Jen.
And it's one of my few dislikes. Come on!
Anyway,
Let her have it.
All right, fine. Shh. You can save it for next time. Okay, so the romance plot, because I didn't understand it. She meets Christopher Lambert or McCloud or whatever her stupid name is. And, like, within 5-10 minutes, they're making out, but I don't understand why. I don't understand why they're, like, doing it. Like, okay, so he fights the dudes on the hover whatevers, and then he becomes young again, and then they're doing it, and I'm like, but why? They don't even know they don't know each other. They don't, like, why?
He was an old man, like, 5 minutes ago, and then he killed some people, and he's young again, and
because
you're
he's
gonna
miraculously
do it.
Young, and that makes him hot.
It's the virility that's just, it's pouring from him. As evidenced by one of my likes that we're going to have to wait for.
I just...
upon one of my dislikes, but I'll save it for next round.
The whole... all of that's just bad. I just... I wish they had not even bothered with it, and they had made... Well, but that'll go to something Yancho Julia will talk about, because I wanted to get at the gender issue, but I didn't want to steal...
That's going to be a different dislike.
Okay, well, we'll save it. So why don't we move on to third like. Julia, you already thrown yours out accidentally because Jen sucks and can't keep things straight.
Yeah, that's fine. So I have done three likes. The opening credits, the Ramirez and McLeod scenes, and the sets and the overall noir look. So it is all up to you guys.
Perfect. All right, Jen, go for it.
So my third like is actually, it was brought up slightly... I really loved when Sean Connery bought a suit.
Yes!
Sorry. I think what I loved most about it was he didn't act in this movie at all. It was just like, we're just going to film you on one of your normal days.
No, you can tell that Mr. Connery, for all of his acting, you know, prowess, really nailed this one in.
Oh, totally nailed it. He brought his A game, that's for sure.
A as in absent. Yeah.
Oh, no. I have so many nice things to say about Sean Connery.
To give you the background, our intrepid viewers, listeners, he shows up in... What am I looking at here? I wonder.
Looking at Mike's, like, underarm. God, that is some sexy underarm, Mike.
Sorry.
Oh, it's so hot.
So, he randomly shows up in He's Alive Again. Yay! And... he's wearing his normal, his name is Ramirez, he's Spanish, really, we swear. So he's wearing his sort of, you know, Shakespearean outfit, and one of the best scenes ever, he shows up in a Shakespearean play. It's fantastic. Excuse me. And then he has to buy a suit to fit in, because that's what you do. And
but he still carries the sword around, which is
he's
great.
Still, right? I like that back then, too, he could get on a plane with his sword. That was kind of awesome. I mean, slightly lack security in the future. Sean, stop raising your hand. Just talk.
Well, this is my like as well, so I just wanted to not have you steal all of the things I want to mention about why I like this.
Okay, him okay. Sipping tea. Doesn't he do that at some one point? He's like sipping tea as they're...
I suspect so. but like, I also agree that I love Sean Connery's suit because I want it because I would look so super cute. I would just look very cute. And I want it.
It's adorable.
I also just really love Sean Connery throughout this whole thing because he is the only one that gets any good dialogue through the whole movie. Nobody else gets any good dialogue, but Sean Connery gets the greatest dialogue. Like, for example, he's on the airplane, and I realize this is a joke that's old now, but in 1991 would have been hilarious. Where he's like, I never eat any... Well, I'm sorry, I got to do it in my impression. I never eat anything I can't identify. You know, it's like the greatest thing ever. I love that line so much. And he's sitting next to the drunk woman who's just like freaking out, and like she's like,
really, just okay. I'm gonna slightly change my like. You shut up. You shut up.
Gotta get one more out. Let me get one more out, please.
No. Wait. I'm slightly changing my like. And I'm not just going with Sean Connery buying a suit, but essentially every scene that Sean Connery is in prior to when he re-meets McLeod, because I could have cared less about that part. But part of that like, because you brought something up, is the airplane scene, which is brilliant. Brilliant!
Particularly
with... The video.
Yes, the video where they explain how airplane crashes work and the plane explodes.
It was beautiful.
It's the most amazing scene. And he's totally freaked out because he doesn't realize everyone else is drunk off their asses.
I love his expressions, too. It's the plane explodes. He's just like...
I wish people could see your expression now, Jen.
They can! They can see it, don't worry.
All right.
If they're watching, if they decide to watch the video of this.
I love everything about Sean Connery in this movie. I just feel like they could have deleted everything else, and they could have just had it like Sean Connery, like in a world that makes no sense to him, with like weird satirical videos about how things can kill him. That would be 2 hours, and that'd be it.
I feel
he's older now. He probably feels that way about smartphones.
I feel like, Sean, what you've just described must have been the impetus for Sleepy Hollow.
I love that move. That show so much.
That show's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
I hope that next season they try to find Jefferson's toothbrush.
Okay. Jen and I are done. So yeah. Julia's already done her third, so it's Mike.
I actually don't have a third. I'm sorry. There were only two things I liked about this movie. The rest
Make
of it...
Make something up. Do you honestly think Duke's legitimate? I liked the commercials with Gary Oldman on Hulu. Love those. And then it's...
He was great.
I think that the Steiner reunion was well represented. Those are not legitimate, Michael.
They're totally legit. And not to mention, Mike is a professional writer. He should be hit with a bullshit his way out of a cardboard box.
And I do on a daily basis, but just this movie makes me so upset. I can't do it.
Bitterness.
I am very bitter about this movie.
Is there one thing someone wears you like?
What's that?
Is there like one like?
Is there like a scene
or a hat that you like?
Every time someone talks during this podcast, Virginia, I come up with another like.
Virginia Madsen in 1991.
My God, smoking hot.
So there you go. That's my third like. The fact that you know she's playing a god awful horrible part, which is my next dislike. But, you know, the fact that she is physically present and that I can look at her on the screen, this is good. Third like.
Excellent. Infidelity for your third like. Great.
Watch it.
All right. We got to switch dislikes then. We'll start with you, Jen. Your third dislike, go.
I dislike that aliens think that it's punishment to send people to a very nice planet and live 1,000 lives and fall in love and eat good food and all sorts of stuff. I thought that was kind of lame. I mean, really, they're morons if they think that's such a horrible thing. We're going to exile you to a future in which you get to live forever!
I'm in.
Because that's bad.
Yeah, I'm in. I'll learn fencing if I get a shot at that, sure.
Right?
Yeah, I'd be so badass at fencing if I had eternity to learn. I'd be like the greatest fencer ever.
I just thought it was way too lightweight, and it just kind of made me angry. I don't actually dislike anything legitimate about this movie.
Just die. I just stop and go away. I hate you. You can't like this film.
Hey, you guys got to sit there and go, Sons of Steel, it's amazing!
Because that movie's so bad, it's good.
The dumbest shit ever!
It's so amazing.
Damn it, likes! No, there's nothing. No.
Have you seen it, Mike? Have you seen something?
I have not.
No, oh, we're going to make this happen, my friend.
Except maybe the penis on the monster. That was awesome.
That's right, it had a big dong!
But that's it.
Oh, dear God.
Seriously, go watch it. It's brilliant.
No, it didn't have a big dong,
but Danny told us the story of his friend who made it, who was like taking all of the sort of conceptual ideas very seriously and being like, okay, I'm going to try to make this awesome monster. And then the director's like, and it has to have a really, really, really big dick.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, no.
Well, okay then.
Actually matters. I'm just going to make random shit.
I'm just, like, imagining, like, this is the alternate version of Bigatures from Lord of the Rings, where it's, you know, if you've ever watched extended cuts, like, the extended back behind the scenes, like, all the Bigature people are like, Peter Jackson told us to make it bigger, and so we just went ridiculous, and he was like, that's enough. And that's exactly the risque, horrible version is Sons of Steel, where they basically, he was told, like, make a really big dick. And then that was the instruction, and then you just weighed, like, this ridiculous one, this one that's, like, the size of an elephant trunk.
I do, however, think that Highlander 2 would have been improved by more big dicks.
I don't know if that would have
been
enough. No, I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm going to get into my third dislike, which is...
Thank you, Julia.
My third dislike is the women in this movie.
There are
and
women?
The fact that, there's yes, like there are actually at least three.
Two. Three?
There are actually at least four. I'm sorry, four.
With dialogue,
so,
right?
So the women that are in this movie are the opera singer at the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Virginia Madsen, as evidenced mm-hmm. before. The woman on the airplane, who sits next to Sean Connery.
Right.
The woman in the diner, who doesn't like Christopher Lambert.
And she's a great actress, by the way, and I don't remember her name, but she's actually fantastic.
So, those are the four women that I've seen in this movie.
Actually, there's five, because his wife...
His first wife?
We have to see his first
wife. The wife in the ward.
So there are five women in this movie. None of them ever talk to each other, so it definitely doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
Sure doesn't.
And, Virginia Madsen's role in this movie is to supposedly care about, changing her world and seeing sunlight, except that the second that Christopher Lambert turns from old man into young man in front of her, she goes from hating him for putting up a shield to wanting to make out with him, and then trying to support him through the rest of the movie. Which, why? We have no idea. It doesn't make any sense, and her character is just a terrible character. And then there's his wife, who basically is fridged, and that's his impetus for the whole movie, is that she dies at the beginning, and we see it in a flashback. There's an opera singer who doesn't actually have a character. She's just basically there to provide background music while he flashes back to the beginnings of his life as an immortal or something, I guess. I don't even know. And then there's, drunk woman on an airplane who basically wants to make out with Sean Connery because he's Sean Connery. There's no reasoning there, though. I will be, honest with you. If you sit on a plane next to some dude that you don't know, you're probably not actually going to be like, yes, let's get it on.
Okay, that is totally not true. And I'm a married woman.
Okay.
But Sean Connery, it's happening. Just saying.
That's, all right.
And that's your prerogative.
To you. And orange diapers all the way. Diapers.
Yeah.
Orange diaper and the French Twizzler, baby.
Okay. I just wanted to add that there are not just the one wife. All of his wives are fridged.
Yeah.
So they're at least
that's
three,
totally
right?
True, because that's also what happens in the first movie.
Right. His wife dies, and he feels very bad about that, and he wants
revenge. It's his whole reason for everything happening in the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of like... But yeah, basically women just have shit roles in this entire movie.
Yeah, I agree. The thing that I find really frustrating is they go to this effort to present these, the scene when he explains to the woman he's been making out and having sex with, where he's sort of explaining that he's immortal and so he's been married to all these other women, and this seems like the perfect moment where they sort of deal with that issue of immortality, where you're having a relationship with mortals and the problems that produces, because of course, mortals die. They don't live forever, unlike him. He's living, infinitely long. But they just sort of just throw it away. These moments where they could actually at least give us character, to give us something to work with here, even though the plot doesn't make any fucking sense. But they just sort of throw it away. This just moment where he's just like, yeah, I was married a bunch of times. By the way, Sean Connery's here.
It's worse than that, though, because they basically start off by giving her the promise of having a character, because, she's a badass terrorist who's getting into secret locked facilities and finding out information that the corporation does not want her to know. And she's, basically doing that by herself. She has a partner, I guess, which we never see again. But basically, she does all this stuff, and she's doing it because she longs to know what it feels like to be in natural daylight. She has never seen it in her entire life, and she wishes she could, and she believes that they're living in darkness for no reason. And that's, actually a pretty strong character motivation. So then why, the second Christopher Lambert becomes young, she's just kind of drops all of her competence and drops all of her drive and ambition and decides that basically everything will revolve around her wanting to make out with him and hope that he decides to take down the shield and she doesn't do any of it herself. I don't understand that.
I have to kind of disagree with that because it seems that to her, he seems like the best way to accomplish her goal.
I can see where you're trying to say that, but I don't see that coming across in the movie.
It doesn't come across in the movie. I mean, she is there. She's trying. She seeks out the old man McCloud, hoping that he can help her take down the shield. And right. Then when she sees that he is a sword-wielding immortal, then obviously she may think, okay, this rabbit hole goes a little deeper and maybe this guy can do even more. What doesn't make sense, which was one of my dislikes as well, was just, okay, he just decapitated two porcupine-headed idiots on hoverboards.
Who are awesome!
He emerges from a fireball, now miraculous. Sorry, that was funny. Miraculously young again. Your first instance is not to actually question this and question perhaps why this happened, your own sanity, whatever. But you just, you have to drop trout for this person. No. No. No! You were the leader of a terrorist cell. You were committed to stuff. What?
Mike just said drop trow, and my night is made.
See, and I feel like if Black Widow had done that, if Black Widow had dropped trow for him, it would have been with complete agenda and cold calculation behind it. But no, it's just sort of like, oh, I've decided I'm in love with you now, for no reason.
For no reason.
Yeah, and after that moment, everything about her terrorist plotting is basically forgotten. There's like one mention of it. Where she might have mentioned, like, we saw some stuff when we were in there, man, and it was
she
cool.
Basically went to get her terrorist MRS.
And where's her terrorist cell when they go in to infiltrate the Supermax prison, which was super easy?
Oh my god, you just reminded me of one of my other favorite scenes!
Oh god.
But, yeah, like, security in the future apparently sucks.
Sucks.
The shield has sapped all vigilance from humanity.
Yeah.
But anyway, it just, where is her terror cell? She's the leader of this thing. She apparently has all this drive and ambition. She broke into the facility. What? And then just, yeah, she's completely off, kind of basically hanging out at McCloud's apartment, looking at his old stuff, and not really questioning that, you know, she should have better things to do. He's immortal. She has seen some very weird shit and may need therapy.
It's all bad. Yeah.
It's just, you know, again, she is a very attractive person to look at, but what? None of it made sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's frustrating, I think, like, to watch films where you think to yourself, you know, they spent all this time making it look kind of pretty, but they didn't spend any time actually developing characters. And it's like, it wouldn't even take that much change to make her into a person who is interesting. But they, like, not just her, like, any character in this. Like, honestly, Ramirez is the only character that's interesting in this whole damn film.
And mostly because it's Sean Connery playing himself.
Right.
And he gets good dialogue, he gets funny scenes, like, he's the comedic relief. You know, the plot still doesn't make sense, but at least, like, you know, there are these little moments where it's like, oh, haha, funny. And then, but, like, other characters don't get that. They get these, like, she, you know, they set up what could be a really great plot, you know, that she is this
there,
you know,
is one secret other character who gets that, but we'll get to that in a minute.
The bartender?
No, but whatever.
It certainly isn't Michael Ironside.
Oh, agree to disagree, Duke. Agree to disagree.
He has no character. He just spends all the time doing this. No, prepare. This is what he does. He goes, hey.
That was good. That was good. And the thing of it is, he lays it down at the end. He just, like, you know, he gets a cut across his belly, he drops his sword, and he just is kind of kneeling there, sort of like, okay, fine, you got me.
Like, yeah, that part was lame. But the rest of it was awesome.
You traveled across time and space to kill this guy, which was a mistake, by the way, because he was ready to die. So you're an idiot. And then you're just going to roll over? And, like,
I didn't say I liked his plot line. But we'll get to that in a minute.
I'm sorry. I get very ranty on this film.
So I think it's my turn for the third dislike, correct?
Yeah, I already ranted.
Are we only on the third?
Yeah, we're on the third, but I'll be really quick. I will say that I'll just get mine out of the way because it was Jen's like, and so I just want to destroy her and bring her down so that her self-esteem will never recover.
My self-esteem is fine, thanks.
I love you, Jen.
I love you, too.
I hated the flying hoverboard crackheads.
Oh, you're an idiot.
No, the hoverboards were cool.
There is no joy in your life.
Those people were terrible. What was with that dude's tongue? And they were stupid on top of it.
Yeah, well, they were stupid.
Their hair was awesome.
No, their hair was porcupine quills.
There was so much better hair in Sons of Steel.
There was. No. Yes, there was much better 80s
hair. No.
Yes.
No.
In comparison, if you take Sons of Steel when he's spitting up milk on his steroid-infested boobies, or 90% of this film,
what?
Sons of Steel booby milk is...
I would rather have the stupid weak-old...
Okay, you know what? The only problem with my camera is right now is that I cannot pectate for you. Because
I don't know if I can
handle
that.
That's what you're leading towards.
See, Mike doesn't understand when I mention booby milk. He's so confused. He's trying to imagine the image. That's the booby milk. I'm just gonna say it at odd intervals. But anyway, I hated the flying hoverboard crackheads. I felt like they were like the 1990s version of the Wayans brothers.
Yeah.
But no, not just good.
Just horrible. Just a bad, you know, hey, let's make two comedic henchmen for the bad guy.
They were bad decision making all around. Really bad versions of Toad in that first X-Men movie.
Yeah.
I'm still really mad about Toad, to be honest.
Ray Park plays Toad in X-Men.
Yeah.
Ray Park is also Darth Maul.
Darth Maul.
Yeah, well, these were at least no he looked Ray Park.
Oh God, I love him.
But in any case, so that
a huge crush on that man.
So we don't need to talk about that anymore. So why don't we skip to our fourth like then? We'll start with you, Jen. Fourth like.
Oh, wait. I lost my paper. Where'd my paper go? I kind of scribbled all over it.
It says Duke Smells. Fuck you. I hate you so much.
Are we really only on the fourth? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I love Michael Ironside.
Yes!
I love him. More than anything in the entire world, his character, granted, had some of the worst plot points and was a major dumbass, but his characterization of that character was fucking hilarious. I loved the glee that he had when he was doing really stupid shit.
It was the glee of someone who had nothing else to work with.
Exactly.
It is the guy who just realizes that the movie he is in is just an abominable piece of shit, but you know what? He's getting paid anyway.
And Michael Ironside is the king of I'm getting paid anyway. So...
That's
yes.
So true.
And I will just add that it's very clear to me, at least, that he knows this script is shit, but that one day he's going to be a better version of this character in Starship Troopers.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay, thank you for mentioning that, because I just want to point out that the villain in the first two Highlander films are both in Starship Troopers, thereby proving that Starship Troopers is one of the greatest movies ever.
Agreed. That movie is amazingly good.
Clancy Brown, Michael Ironside. Oh, God. I have so much love for these two men. And, Yes, yes.
I agree. I totally agree. This is also my, like, Michael Ironside. I say Michael Ironside because not the character. The character.
No. Yeah,
it's all Michael Ironside, like, just desperately trying to make this movie interesting by actually acting, because Christopher Lambert doesn't. He just spends half the time going, hey, I am angry.
No, he's ridiculous.
He does that. But, like, Ironside is just overacting through this whole thing. And of course he does, because his last name's Ironside. How many people are named Michael Ironside in Hollywood?
Right?
And most of them are just, like, stupid names. But no, he came up with Michael Ironside, because he's a badass.
Adrian Paul is a much better Thailander than Christopher Lambert will ever be. Just saying.
Because Christopher Lambert talks like this all the time.
No, it's just a really horrible actor. But
he always whispers sounds. He never says normal stuff.
That's where Christian Bale got his Batman.
No, Christian Bale's like, hey, I'm gonna matter.
You know what? You guys need to stop dissing on my Christian Bale.
Christian Bale just makes like noises from the back of his throat and makes air sounds.
I'm gonna talk about my fourth like now.
Yes. Because I am very intoxicated.
Okay. We don't need to talk about Batman anymore. So
that was my fault.
My fourth like is Dr. Cox, even though his character makes no sense and none of the plot makes any sense. I watched a lot of Scrubs, and then when Dr. Cox appeared on this, I was like, wait, what's Dr. Cox doing here? And then it turned out he's like a major villain who basically plays Dr. Cox in a corporate future.
Oh my god, that corporate boardroom scene? Can we just admit it's amazing?
I mean, it's terrible. All of it is terrible. But every time I saw him, I was sort of like,
Dr. Cox.
For some reason, Dr. Cox has decided to get together with Michael Ironside because they'll make an effective team somehow.
You know, I think the thing I like about this movie, and I this is genuine, is that it allows us to basically extrapolate what these actors could have done in other things had they been paired together. You know, like, what would Dr. Cox, Michael Ironside, been able to do if they were just, you know, on a buddy movie on Route 66?
Oh, my God, if Michael Ironside had ever been on Scrubs.
Right, exactly. Like, what if Christopher Lambert and...
got into the hospital after doing some sort of property damage rampage and damaging himself. And then Dr. Cox would have to treat him, but he'd also be destroying the hospital at the same time.
While Sean Connery sits in the corner sipping tea.
Right. So, yeah, I think that's my fourth thing. It's just that it allows us to extrapolate and have fun with it because really there's no other reason for it.
I also should say that by that point in the movie, I watched this with Moss and my dangerously mysterious friend Jeffrey and my friend Tori. And we were at their house, and we were like, okay, we're going to make some, like, random drinks that we had in a pitcher that was, like, peach juice and iced tea and then lots of liquor of various sorts, and it didn't taste like alcohol at all, but the more we drank, the more palatable it was to be able to sit there and pretend to watch Highlander 2. And I think by the time... Dr. Cox and Michael Ironside got together to do their crimes, I was just sort of like, I don't understand what's happening, but I don't care because this peach tea tastes really good.
I can respect that.
Mad props.
I mean, peach I couldn't go out to a bar where they serve underage people to drink beer afterwards because I had to actually drink during the movie.
See, I really was about 15 minutes in where I wished I had smuggled something in because, yeah.
And yes,
because you went to that thinking that you were going to see a movie that you would enjoy. And
yes, you're a big Highlander fan, and I just, you know,
That's like being a kid who really loved the Star Wars Episode 4 and then watched the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes.
Being really excited about it.
Life Day. What? Yeah.
What? Just saying, what is even happening?
Why?
Why is porn? Grandpa watching porn?
Wookiee porn. There's so much Wookiee porn. That stuff's filthy too.
Oh Lord.
All right. So, Sean and Mike, what are your fourth likes?
I already did mine, so it's actually up to Mike.
No, I actually did mine. Just the fact that we can have these, basically that we can have these conversations about it. Because I'm running out of things to like.
All right, well then that's...
Fourth dislike, Jen, go.
Wait, fourth dislike?
Yep, fourth dislike. We're at the fourth.
Sean Connery's death was the stupidest thing I've ever seen in a movie. Just saying.
It seems such a waste. Like, you know, Connery, take him out.
He couldn't have just, like, kept that up for one more second so he could get out the door as well.
Okay, that was really the best part of
that. It seemed to crash slow.
Well, also, like...
It's, like, descending at, like, this super slow rate, and somehow they're super threatened. Oh, no! The fan that's not even spinning that quickly! Ah! And they're so scared, and then he, like, puts his finger up, and there's the whole very, very Sean Connery speech of... living your life for a single moment, and oh my goodness, it is epic. And then they walk out the door, because apparently the damn thing was unlocked the entire time.
Was it, or did he unlock it with his magic Highlander powers?
I don't even know.
Well, he didn't use his finger to do it, he was using another digit.
He used the fourth.
It was such a waste, and it was, I mean, really, at that point, it was... You know what? Really, the only reason we put Sean Connery in this movie was to give him a bunch of scenes where he could be Sean Connery. And that is amazing, because it's Sean Connery. The end.
During that scene, Moss was like, it's really too bad that they all drank that fizzy lifting drink. really. If they had just known, burping would have solved it all.
All right.
Really would have.
Too bad.
Willy Wonka references are genius. Can I just ask a question about bad guys? Why do they always create these things where like the walls come in, but they come in really
because
slow?
Their plans are sheer elegance in their simplicity.
Why don't you just make them quick? You get it done quicker.
Sheer elegance,
except that we forgot to lock the door. So really, we just suck.
Yeah. Like, oh, well, and then, you know, we know that Sean Connery's going to sacrifice himself anyway, because that's what heroes do.
But
all right, fair enough. All right.
Sacrifice himself in an epic sword fight like he's supposed to?
Yeah, I mean, at least in the first Highlander, he got taken out in a big epic sword fight and... the top of a crumbling stair, and it was lightning everywhere. It's fantastic.
Right?
I know.
Gorgeous. No.
But in any case, let's switch over to Julia. Julia has her fourth.
So, this is kind of a problem with the first movie as well, but it really bothered me this time around. I just had a lot of time to think about it because I was so bored with the actual movie and didn't make sense of the plot. Christopher Lambert is the Highlander from Scotland. He does not sound at all like he's from Scotland.
Well, that's because he's actually from an alien planet called Thais.
That's because he's Belgian, I guess, right? Okay, but then Sean Connery, Ramirez the Spaniard, has a thick Scottish brogue. Why the fuck did you just not cast Sean Connery as the Highlander in the first place?
At least call him the Highlander.
Like,
and then
have him be the Highlander. Why...
Because the Belgian sounds dumb.
Because he's actually a lowlander from Scotland, so...
Maybe it'll be having some clan fighting going on, and that's not
exactly.
Good.
Exactly.
You don't want it going on.
I just have to say, though, like, he in no way sounds Spanish at all.
No.
He doesn't even try.
No, but then, like, there's one person in this movie who sounds Scottish. Who is it? Not the Highlander, that's for sure.
I'm sorry, is this a dislike of this movie or just the Highlander series in general?
Well, like I said, it's kind of about the Highlander series in general, but I really thought about it a lot during this movie because I was so bored with the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I'm totally Spanish.
How could this movie be boring? I'm sorry.
Well, like, so there were scattered moments of, like, what the fuck just happened here that was kind of amazing, except that it was just cushioned with all this boring bullshit, and the plot didn't make any sense, and it was just like, what? I'm not having fun.
Can you
skip those parts?
Can you just imagine, like, because if he's Spanish, that means he has to speak Spanish. Can you just imagine, like, Sean Connery speaking Spanish?
Just when he introduces his name, okay? I am half Spanish, and I was offended. You do not even know how to say your own goddamn name.
I'm Ramirez.
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 Cobush Dash.
Villanova de Sanchez Ramirez. Dear God! You're ordering nachos from a TGI Friday. It's horrible.
Nachos, please.
Give me my nachos.
With extra jalapenos. It's wrong.
My name is Ramirez, and I would like a tortilla. In Spain, that's like an omelet.
I'm sorry, why doesn't Julia play Sean Connery in her skits?
I was going to say, she's really good.
Brilliant.
That's not fair.
We love you, honey. But I really have to pee.
All right, so we'll speed it up.
I just thought I'd throw that out there.
That's really disgusting. Well, thank you. So where are we? Are we at Mike?
Yeah, what are we on? Dislikes?
Fourth dislike, yep.
No, I have a list. It's extensive. Just continuity errors. It's absolutely hilarious. Just like, okay, so you see somebody walk into the church where they have this confrontation over the dead wife's grave, and then literally the next scene over, that same sort of door opening, looking down from above, the light coming in, the bird flying across. That's actually also Christopher Lambert's apartment, which, you know, I hope he's not paying a lot in rent. But it's the same cut. I mean, that is basic filmmaking. You don't do that. It's sloppy. How did this even manage? Just little continuity errors like that. It's like, where did he get his katana? I mean, he had, which by the way, naming General Katana after a sword.
Yeah, but they named the Spaniard Ramirez and the Scotsman
naming is not their strong suit.
No.
But, my train of thought just got derailed. Right, just the continuity errors were just astounding. Where did McCloud get his katana? Because when the first time he faced General Katana, he was using the funky past future sword. And then somewhere, I don't know where he pulled it out of, and I'm not sure I want to, he got his cool sword from Highlander 1 back, because, you know, the 80s and katanas were awesome. Just continuity errors, and like, are you even wearing the same clothes that you were in the last scene? Just crazy. Just anybody who worked on this, God love them. I'm sure it was a terrible shoot, but man, you should just disavow. Just
Agreed.
Bad filmmaking. So that's mine.
Okay. Mine will be vaguely related, but not really. It's that this film is utterly lifeless. The only thing that seems to have any heart in the film is actually the music, sometimes. But mostly when it's not the actual composer, it's like they've stolen music from an opera. But for the most part, it's just totally boring. And no life, there's no heart, there's no investment in the narrative. There's no heady stuff. Like, the closest you get is Sean Connery talking about life before he dies and whatever. But there's not really, like, even Michael Ironside, who could at least be interesting. He could, if they gave him some cool dialogue, like as a villain, he could do something cool. But no, he just basically goes, hey, the whole time. So it's not a very compelling film, and it's just, it'll be very much linked to my fifth like, but I won't say anything more on that front. Yeah, it'll be related to that. But it's just a lifeless film. There are not many films that I watch where I just think the people that made this did not give a shit what they were doing. They just didn't care. They just shut off and they stopped. And they just put some stuff onto some films, and then they like cut it together, and, you know, they pissed on it, and then they sent it to the studio and said, put it in the theaters. Have a good day. And that's what this feels like. It has no life. So shall we go to the fifth like then? Jen, fifth like. If you say something dumb, I'm going to hate you so much.
I'm so saying something dumb. Okay. So obviously, I loved the hovercraft lighting scene. That was amazing. And he's a very old man at, we'll just go with the it's actually pre-hovercraft gliding. And there's a really stupid battle. They have an obsession. You know, speaking of unions that are well represented in this movie, the scaffold union is exceedingly well represented in this film.
Oh wait, I'm sorry. I got to correct you. The scaffolds are not unionized. Yeah. They're one of the few that does not have a union.
Catwalks are
unionized, but not scaffolds.
I apologize. The catwalks, very well represented. Great, really bad, actually. It's somehow a worse fight scene than the hovercraft glider fight scene. And one of the porcupines gets killed, and the very, very old McCloud, because he had chosen to grow old and die instead of living forever and returning to his home planet or whatever. So he finally has his first quickening, which basically, metaphorically, is one giant fucking orgasm. The biggest explosion that you will ever see. This rivals Michael Bay orgasms. That's how big the thing is.
Just the shattered glass alone. I mean, their glass budget must have been $1 million.
Oh my god. The amount of, and it's all sparkly, and it's coming from left and right, and literally, it is a 5 to 10 minute scene of explosions. And it was stunning. It was so gorgeous. I loved every bit of it. The glass. I think they destroyed an entire city street for this one exploding marathon. And then they end it with, of course, you know, a truck with a smiley face on it exploding in a fiery inferno and you know, engulfing McCloud and... And then he walks out looking all badass and young and
90s tastic and that's
God,
great.
Gorgeous.
All I heard from all of what you just said, Jen, is that you love the orgasms in this film.
I loved the orgasms in this film. Yes, I did. They were explosive.
Yay. I got you to say it. I am going to make that a soundbite for the episode we put in our Hugo ballot.
I think it's necessary. Yes, absolutely.
It's just going to be you repeating for 2 hours. I like orgasms.
I love the orgasms. There you go. That's for you.
Julia, what about your number 5?
So my fifth like is that even though this really didn't actually feature Queen, Queen did appear briefly and a kind of magic was playing in the jukebox on the diner, and all this led me to watch the video for A Kind of Magic, which I had never seen before because my mom let me watch musical videos when I was younger because she believed they were unhealthy, and she wasn't the only person who believed that. There are people high in society who agree with her. Not that I ever had that lecture like 50 billion times as a kid. Anyway, this basically means that as an adult, I go through waves where I will occasionally remember that I could watch videos that I've never seen before, and this led me to watch the A Kind of Magic video, which is amazing and wonderful. And if you haven't watched it, you should just look it up on YouTube immediately, because
it's a good video.
So much better than Highlander 2.
Queen's videos were always, they were at the forefront in the 80s of just making really cool little videos. Just great stuff. So watch other Queen videos. You know, they're really creative, not just them sitting there playing on a stage.
I will have to go and do that.
Do that. It's awesome.
Yeah, Freddie Mercury has said that he when he's questioned on the matter of whether or not he sounds like the album when he's on stage, he says that's not the point of a stage performance. It's the point is to entertain the audience, to put on a show. And so,
it's definitely true. Like the one of the amazing things about the A Kind of Magic video is that he is the lead singer, and he is basically there every single time. Everything he does is sex. The people who are behind him, like the rest of the band are just kind of like looking kind of awkward, like, okay, we're playing these instruments and this is all kind of silly, but I'm just going to not look at anyone and play my instrument. And Freddie Mercury is like, no, I am sex.
Freddie was...
He liked just... the orgasms.
Yes, I think he enjoyed the
orgasms. Oh, he definitely loved
so
the orgasms. He had so many quickenings.
And he didn't really care who he got them from.
That's true.
That gives him to my left. Just like, shh, leave it alone.
Okay, so jumping to Mike, fifth like, go.
Oh, God, you're really going to make me think here because I have run out.
Was that? Are you saying you like Michael Ironside's grunting?
Sure, let's just leave it at that.
Now I'm slightly worried.
Well, no, he made me. I'm sitting here. It is a funny movie to tear apart, and it is really unintentionally comedic, which is just a damn shame.
I don't know. I think there's moments of absolute intentional comedy.
Oh, there are absolute
the taxi.
Of...
Michael Ironside's like destroying the
okay,
taxi.
Okay, you know what?
Scene.
That's mine. I'm gonna pick the taxi. You know what? That was a funny scene. You know, it seemed like everybody involved was having a good time. So yeah, I can mildly like that scene somewhat in the way I like American cheese. It's inoffensive.
Melts beautifully.
It melts. It's inoffensive. It adds a certain texture. There we go.
Okay. Well, then I guess I'll get to my fifth like. My fifth like is that I fell asleep. Multiple times. I was in need of a really good rest, and this film made it possible. And so, rather than wasting an hour and a half of one night, I spent that 15 minutes at a time when I fell asleep more than once. So I really recommend, if you were in need of a good night's sleep, just put some Highlander 2 on, and within 5 or 6 minutes, I think you'll start nodding off, and you just click the pause button, and you just go to sleep and go off to dreamy land. Because this is the perfect film for it.
If you're smart, you don't hit the pause button and you just sleep through the rest of the movie. Like I did with certain previous films that we reviewed on this podcast. Just saying.
So yeah, so I know that really is like a backhanded compliment, but you know.
Because you're not creative enough to come up with all the awesome that is in this movie?
There's no awesome.
Seriously?
I mean, I could say that I'm fascinated by Christopher Lambert's brow ridge.
It is impressive. You know, he will never get rain in his eyes.
He won't. And if we ever cloned a Neanderthal, we would at least have somebody who could be our diplomat.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a little mean.
He's going to come get you now. He has a sword.
He could. He'll cut me up. All right. Fifth dislike, Jen, go.
Okay. So my fifth dislike is that I dislike that this movie was made as an origin story, even though Highlander, the original, was an origin story. So this one is an origin story that completely rewrites the original origin story. I would have preferred that this was just a standalone film about non-Highlanders, and that was like, you know, they just like threw that totally separate. I think it would have been a more enjoyable movie if it wasn't Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery playing the characters that they played in the first movie.
You know,
because then we could have disassociated it completely from that first film.
You know, that's a really good point. If it had been about sort of that sort of decent sci-fi trope with the ozone combined with, you know, some time-traveling aliens, maybe you got something there that you don't have to worry about. Because, I mean, you're bogged down with what happened to the first Highlander.
Exactly.
So if you can find a way to make that work, but again,
it's still, I mean, obviously the plot is completely ridiculous on a number of levels, but most of those levels are actually because of our hang-ups about the original movie. I mean, granted, it's totally absurd. Like I said, I hated that the punishment for, you know, being a rebel in the alien past is going to the human future. That sucks! I still don't understand that.
And immortality.
And immortality! Oh my god!
Oh no!
Oh, it's awful! Yeah. Oh no,
tell me where. Tell me who I piss off to get that. That'd be great.
Right? Exactly. And... Yeah, obviously, the issues with women in this movie, there's a lot of issues, but honestly, if you completely separated this from the original Highlander film, and you made a few tweaks here and there, put a decent script writer on it, you might actually have a decent science fiction story. Probably not, but maybe. So I really, really disliked that this was the continuation of the first Highlander. That a fantasy movie became a science fiction movie, and with no real explanation as to why.
All right. Well, why don't we jump to Julia? Julia, your last piece?
My last dislike is that when I watched the A Kind of Magic video, and I saw how beautifully, vigorously, perfectly embodying sex Freddie Mercury was in 1986, and thought about the fact that in 5 years he would be dead because of AIDS, I was profoundly depressed. And it made me think all over again about just how terrifying in the 80s AIDS was as this, like, horrifying thing that we didn't even fully understand, but we knew was a disease that was striking the gay population at a disproportionate amount, and that was taking the most vital, healthy-looking people and turning them into just completely wasted, dead people. And then just thinking about how Freddie Mercury was so awesome, and he totally was sex, and that was why he died.
Buzzkill.
That made me super sad. And I blame Highlander 2 for leading me to ruminate on that.
That's fair. And, you know, by the way, you two, Julia is really elevating this entire podcast.
She always does. I don't Otherwise, know why she feels it's necessary to elevate torture cinema, but whatever.
Because otherwise it's just, you know, Jen and Sean just sort of saying they love and or hate each other.
That's not all we say.
That's not all they say. Sean also threatens to cut people's body parts off.
He does do that.
Only the parts they don't need.
Well, alrighty then.
So, Sean and Mike, what are your last dislikes?
Well, Mike goes first, because I'm saving my big one for the end.
You do that. you know, my dislike is that just this is yet another film from Hollywood. Hollywood puts out some great films. Independent people put out some great films. But there is that sort of, you know, from like the really bad TV movie to Highlander 2, which was a tentpole, was like a huge studio release that just utterly discounted the fact that you need a writer. And as a writer myself, I am utterly offended by this, that you can just slap together a complete piece of shit and put it out as a movie, so long as it has enough beheadings and sex and explosions and set pieces that, you know, it'll make a nice trailer and get people in for those 3 weeks until people realize just what a piece of shit it is.
Or they just never realize, in which case you have the entire Transformers franchise.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, you could also blame Highlander 2 really for Michael Bay, if you so choose. But it just, you know, writing could have at least salvaged this monstrosity. And the fact that no discernible writer was used in any coherent way on this is just, come on, man. I mean, you know, when I was 19 years old, I saw all the problems in this. When I rewatch it at 41, I'm just like, the holes are just jumping out of me, and it's just, it's crazy. And any writer worth their salt could have done something if anybody had listened to them. So stop pissing on writers, Hollywood.
Yeah, what? Hollywood. That's right.
The only thing I take away from this entire conversation is tent poles and big ones.
Mm.
But I may have had too much beer.
Or you need a long weekend.
That is entirely true.
Which I didn't mean to know.
Oh, man. That's not a conversation we need to continue. So
your last dislike, Mr. Duke. It better be a big
dislike.
One.
This is related to a pet peeve of mine that I've grown increasingly annoyed with whenever it involves swords in particular, or any object which might potentially impale or cut somebody fatally, which is the fact that for some reason so many films seem to have chimps basically writing the fight scenes. And in this film in particular, I don't think they ever swing at each other in any instance where it might be they could cause bodily harm in the event that the person did not block. They're like swinging above their heads. They're swinging like down, not at their feet, but like the ground that's in front of their feet, and like waiting to parry at times, like when they know the person's like, there's no point in this where I look at their sword fights and think, yeah, if he didn't block there, he totally would lose his ear. Instead, it's almost always just like so forced, and the scenes are like, at least when the Ramirez scene happens, that scene makes sense because they're play fighting. They're not real fighting. But in the scenes with the, you know, Ironside, that is supposed to be they're trying to cut each other's heads off. And at no point do I believe that they're actually trying to cut each other's heads off, which is just a total failure. And I find it just irritating because they could just not do it. Like, they could have just played a game of chess, as valuable as that all was. They could just play chess or checkers or battleship or some shit. Competitive shoots and ladders. Done. It would have been just as difficult, right? As
yes.
Swinging above their head by a foot and completely missing.
Yeah, I don't think they hired an actual...
Well, you know, I just looked this up. Bob Anderson was the guy who did all the sword fighting for the original Star Wars trilogy, The Lord of the Rings. He did the original Highlander and was the sword master for the Highlander series. So this guy knows swords. He did not do this one. So,
it's very obvious.
Okay, I was waiting for that. Obvious. I was like, wait a minute.
This guy's been a sword master on like everything. He is the guy. If you have a sword fight, you go to Bob Anderson, and he sets you up. He did Pirates of the Caribbean.
But he probably decided this movie sucked something hardcore.
Yes, and so, he had better things to do. So, I mean, just
if
saying.
If only Sean Connery, what's her name, Virginia
Madsen,
and Michael Ironside and all the rest had made the same decision that Bob Anderson had.
God bless Bob.
Even better, they should have made the scenes all better if they'd given them all swords and said you all have to fight and just, like, put them in a scene and they all have to, like, cut each other. That would have been great.
So Highlander Deathmatch.
Yeah. Nice. I think that would have been a much better movie.
Highlander Deathmatch is pretty much the premise of all Highlander films, though, right?
But it's sort of, like, very meta.
Yeah. Yeah. But in any case, that's what I hated. I didn't like the fight scenes. I don't understand why they even existed. There's no point to them.
No, except to fly around on hoverboards and gliding things.
I mean,
you get corroded by a wire.
My God! I totally forgot the garroted head. Oh, I love that. It was amazing.
Of course you did. And on that note, we're done with Jen. We're done with Jen. So now is the time when we need to grade this piece of shit. If Jen grades it above a D, I will immediately remove her from the show for all time.
Okay. You ready?
And then, no, I just, God damn it.
You know, you need to create a class of ironic grades, because ironically it could be an A.
Exactly. No, and I am the queen of ironic grades. You ready?
Ready.
Oh, fuck no. You. Fuck you and no. Die.
No.
You, an A+, seriously.
And you hated Sons of Steel. I don't understand you at all, Jen.
I know you don't. I don't think we've agreed on a movie yet, Julia. Wait, no, we had one. What was it?
It was Mannequin, I think.
Mannequin.
We all hated Mannequin.
We all hated Mannequin.
Oh.
See, Jen, this is why whenever you say, I like that book, I will go, but I can't trust anything you say because...
You know what, though? I have 2 degrees of like, and I've explained this many times, yet somehow you've never understood it.
Because I don't listen to anything that comes
after this. I have things that I legitimately like because I think they're actually good, okay? And then there are things that just bring me joy because they're fucking hilarious. That doesn't mean they're good.
We're supposed to be grading these on...
But
their qualitative value.
Whatever.
No, Sean, you really can't tell her that because she likes something, it's not good, and she can't grade it.
I get to grade it however you want. What did you guys grade Sons of Steel at? I'm
sorry. A+, man. That is the only one I've ever given.
And that, there is
and that
nothing
is, that remains
qualitative.
The only torture cinema movie that I have ever voluntarily rewatched.
Exactly, and I'm
which
sorry,
I
you
did
not
immediately
make
after
an argument that was actually a good movie.
Immediately after Highlander 2, we were like, "Finally, that's over. Can we watch Sons of Steel now?" And we did, and that was amazing.
Because Sons of Steel is unintentionally
so
brilliant.
Much a better movie.
It really is. Boob milk. That's all I got to say. Boob milk.
I could have done without the boob milk.
Make me show you my boob.
I'm not going to.
Don't do that, Jen. Don't. I feel like that violates Google's Hangout live broadcast.
I'm pretty sure it does.
Not to mention my vision. That's not right. And your marriage vows.
So, okay, Jen gave it an A+. I have to give it an F+. I would love to give it a lower grade, except that I actually do think the science... fictional premise of the ozone layer thing and the sets and all those things that I actually liked about it, they were there. It wasn't the worst movie ever. It had some really interesting things that could have happened, and the potential was there. So it was like not enough to be an F-, but it was still not good at all.
Mike, what is your grade?
Can you see this?
F-. Excellent.
Not only did this movie, on its own merits, suck that badly, but it managed to take down an entire franchise. It managed to destroy what Christopher Lambert could have called a career. And
yeah, but, like, I don't know that Christopher Lambert needed a career. And...
Well, okay.
There was that point on the airplane when they were showing the safety video that was all about how planes crash. Like, there were these scattered moments of kind of brilliance.
No, to me, if you not only make your own movie suck, but you retroactively make another movie suck that didn't suck before,
it didn't. First Highlander suck though. The first Highlander is still good.
It's still colored. It is tainted. F-.
No.
Should not have happened.
The
should
first
have
Highlander. Still amazing. It's still full of Queen music. It still actually has a recognizable plot.
It does. But it's
I would only give it a B.
I don't give Highlander more than like a B, maybe a B+ because of nostalgia. But I mean the Highlander 2 gets an F- for taking a good movie and just doing unspeakable acts to it.
No more talking, Jen. I can see you trying to talk. Mike is trying to explain why he hates the movie. Let him explain.
No, I have a hate.
Okay. Okay, well, right. I'm going to join Mike and give it an F-. This is one of the worst films we watched.
But you still also liked parts of it, Sean.
It doesn't matter if I like parts, but I am required.
About, like, I feel like things that are F-, like, you just can't like anything about it.
No, you can't. And you liked much. Mike's is a legitimate
I can only come up with two things.
I can buy Mike, but Sean, you kept talking about different things that you thought were really great, and how can you give it an F minus at that point?
Let me go just a brief recap of what my actual likes were. One was Gary Oldman in a commercial on Hulu. One was the noir scenery union. One was Sean Connery's suit and his existence in the film. The other was Michael Ironside overacting. And the last was I fell asleep.
But you liked the plane safety video, and you liked the scene where Sean Connery got his suit.
I liked it ironically.
You like things about the movie, and I feel like that kind of makes it.
I think you need an ironic grade. Like, you know, you need the grade based on the merits of the film.
I feel like the films that I've given an F minus to are things like Transformers, where like I was a seething ball of rage the entire time, and I did not like anything about that movie.
Wow. The times that I was awake, I was a seething ball of rage. Because I hated this movie so much.
I find rage is better than caffeine. Just saying.
I find joy is better than both rage and caffeine.
It took me 4 days to finish this movie.
I watched it one evening.
I had to stop myself and be like, I just...
All right, that's fine. So you have an F minus, and Mike has an F minus, and I have an F plus, and Jen has an A plus for some.
It is, on average, a D. Thank you.
Fucking Jen, ruining the whole thing. Ruins the average. The irony is this now probably has a better grade than Transformers. Transformers 2.
Because like, Jen likes the Transformers 1s, and she keeps giving them good grades, too.
Not the Transformers 2, she hated Transformers 2.
I hated Transformers 2, I thought that was fucking shit. First one I enjoyed.
Do you think this movie is better than Transformers 2?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
So much better.
Definitely. That's why I gave it an F+.
Exactly.
Fine, I'll give it an F. You happy?
No, I can do whatever you want.
It's a D. We averaged a D.
I gave it an F now.
Peace.
Anyway, okay. So on that note, I just want to mention one little thing, which is, and then I want Mike to mention that he has a book thingy coming out because that'll be important. But I did want to say that I'm going to add a new feature to the show, this particular type, the torture cinema. I am calling it the Can Casting Changes Fix It, which is going to be one host each episode will have to come up with. The object of this game is basically you have to come up with a new cast for the main components. And possible minor character changes in order to either make the film objectively better or make it so bad that it suddenly becomes good by how bad it is.
Well, Nicolas Cage will be in all of them.
So that's a new feature we're doing. Not now. We're not doing it now. Not now.
Oh, come
future
on!
Future episodes, because you have to prep it beforehand. So on that note, Mike, you have a book coming out.
I have a book.
You might want to mention it.
I have a book. It's The Enceladus Crisis. It is the sequel to The Daedalus Incident. It is coming out May 6th. It has more sailing ships in space, and this time we put the sailing ships in space on the cover so that you know what it's about. And
they're so pretty.
It really was a pretty cover. I was very excited to see it. And if you like The Daedalus Incident, which apparently people did, which was great, you might want to check this out, and you can find out more at michaeljmartinez.net.
Does it have a more coherent plot than Highlander 2?
My daughter's kindergarten story about how she wanted to grow a garden on her roof had more of a plot than this.
Wait, more of a plot than Highlander 2 or more of a plot than your book? Because I just want to clarify that.
I'm not going to comment on that, but definitely more than Highlander 2.
All right, guys. So, excellent. So do go check out the new book, michaeljmartinez.com.
Net.
I have had many alcohols, so I'm not intelligent.
You can go home.
And I'm just going to say that this movie should be entirely recast with the characters from The Princess Bride, and then it would be fucking epic!
Okay, enough with you, Jen. So thank you, Mike, for picking the movie, donating, and then picking. And then obviously for coming on the show and talking to us about this film.
Happy to, anytime. It was a lot of fun. Believe it or not, it was almost worth watching the movie.
Almost qualified the statement. Good work. Good work, you writer person, you.
I use words for a living.
Thank you, Julia, for, I guess you don't feel well, but thank you for putting up for 2+ hours, so.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're not welcome. Happy about that at all.
I blame Mike. This
we love
is
you,
all
Julia.
Mike's fault.
No, I accept the blame. I came here for my karmic punishment.
Fair enough. And not my thanking Jen for anything, so.
Thanks, Jen, for liking this movie inexplicably. What?
God.
What's this?
Whatever! Come on, people! California! Whatever.
I'm in New York. We just do one finger.
Well, I would have done that,
Jen.
But I don't think it's allowed. Just
kidding. Jen. Jen,
that's
Jen.
Not the finger either. Anyway.
Oh, no, I know which finger it is, but I can't do that because it's against the law. And on that note, awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.
Hey everybody, welcome to the World SF Tour, our special feature throughout the year in which we're obviously celebrating World SF. There are a number of ways you could support this show, just really quick. One is you could subscribe to the show. We're on iTunes, we have the blog, all that good stuff. There's all kinds of cool stuff on the blog, too, you should check out. That's one way you could support us. You can obviously let people know about us. That's really cool when people do that, link to us and all that good stuff. And the other way is actually to go to audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty, sign up for a 1-month free trial membership. You get a free audiobook out of the deal. You get to try their service if you like it, to keep it, which is cool. And yeah, I mean, that's really that simple. So that helps us as much as the rest of it does. But in any case, thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoy this year, this very specially themed year. And of course, if we missed anything, which we're undoubtedly going to do, feel free to let us know. Send us an email or leave a comment or something. Maybe even on some of our discussion episodes, you let us know about some great works from a certain region that we should be talking about. So in any case, I'll let you get to the episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Come on. All right, it is recording. We are good to go. Thanks, Jen.
Save that for the blooper reel.
God, that's perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Truth is, I have no clue what this is all about because I don't read the scripts.
I knew that was going to happen.
Nicely done. Well played. Is this some kind of shit?
Some kind of Duke joke? Yes, it is a Duke joke.
I might as well just say that. So, Sean Connery was actually Darth Vader in this alternate universe. Right. Totally makes sense, I guess. What is that sound?
I don't know. That was weird.
I'm killing Mike. I blame him.
What did I do?
Oh, there's just a really weird, like, crackle sound that went over Jen's line just then.
Well, that's Jen's line. Unhand me, you stupid southern piece of... Ow!
Ever. It's like I can't figure. I was too far from the microphone. Okay, ready?
No, that's fine. No, leave it exactly as that because that's perfect. It's perfect.
Fine.
There's never another way.
Wanna bet? I don't have anything to rustle.
Just rustle your own clothes.
Give me a second.
We got 6 minutes.
Wanna bet?
I can't even hear that. I didn't hear that at all. Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. Do it over. I will wrestle for you.
Okay, ready? Wanna bet? Oh, yeah.
We're going to chill out, have ourselves some good old-fashioned BBQ. Excuse me. That should just be barbecue. I don't know why I said BBQ.
I think it was adorable. You should just keep it at BBQ.
It's a BBQ. It's not really a Southern thing to say. Patrick Hester would die in his grave.
But it's funnier.
Exactly.
Fine, I'll leave it as BBQ. All right.
With our shirts on, right, Charliekins?
Without our shirts on, you mean.
Oh, crap.
Totally doesn't work with shirts on.
But it's so unexpected of Jacob's character. I think it really shows some emotional depth.
I feel like for Jacob, having his shirt on is kinky.
Right?
What the hell is a wombat noise?
I don't know.
You wrote this, dude.
What the hell is a wombat noise?
I don't know.
You wrote this, dude.
I don't know which is worse, that he died from wombat-induced myocardial infraction, or that we don't, haven't,
it's an infarction.
Whatever.
That he died.
Yeah, because Jacob would know.
Anyway, just like you said earlier, it's a character development. Repeat the line. Yeah!
I say! Can't see the queen! William Wallace!
That was the best fight ever! Dying over here. Okay, keep going.
All right. She's reading the direction.
Follow the rudimentation of a famous song of Jen's choosing, and which will forever ingrain themselves in the minds of listeners.
You have to do it to a song.
I can't even think of a song. At all.
Call me maybe.
I don't know that song. Damn it, my
Wrecking
brain
Ball.
Is empty of all songs.
Wrecking Ball.
The Final Countdown.
The Final Countdown.
You got that.
Na 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 na. Is that enough?
Sure. Okay, fine.